Welcome to Conversatio, the Belmont Abbey College podcast. I'm the host for today. My name is Father Elias Correa Torres. I'm one of the monks at Belmont Abbey. And our guest today is Monsignor Patrick Winslow, Vicar General and Chancellor of the Diocese of Charlotte. Today we're going to be talking about the recent letter, Fiducia Supplicans, that came from the Vatican, and what it means and how we are to understand it and interpret it. But before we begin, allow Father Monsignor Winslow to introduce himself.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm with the Diocese of Charlotte. I've been in my current position as Vicar General Chancellor for the past 4 years or so. Prior to that, since I was ordained in 1999, I've been parish work. However, while I was doing parish work, I was sent back to school for canon law studies and received my license in canon law from Catholic University of America, which is also where I went to seminary in the 90s. So it was a nice way to return and see some different professors again, and to be able to study a different discipline when I went back for canon law. It was theological and philosophical studies during the 90s. And then prior to that, my academic career was in the area of the sciences. I was in graduate school studying analytical chemistry at Georgia Tech. And it was there that I moved into, very naturally, philosophy and theology. So that's a little bit about my professional, ministerial, academic background.
Science and theology work very well together. My own background in meteorology makes it a natural fit to be a priest.
It is a natural fit. Yeah. I mean, there is one God, the source of all natural law. So it's wonderful to be able to study. And I remember, actually, when I was studying the sciences, people having some strange conflict between faith and science that was never really part of my mind, my thinking, or my family, or my upbringing. So, I think people are actually taught to think that there's a difference.
And that there's a conflict.
Yeah, there really isn't. But we're getting off point already, aren't we?
We are. So, yes, Fiducia Supplicans recently came out, and, of course, many headlines, mm-hmm. which as we've seen aren't always very clear and can often mislead in what the letter actually says. But if you would kind of outline what is the main message of it, what would you say?
Sure. I think you're right, first and foremost, to say that a document of this type, with the distinctions that it's trying to make, does not lend itself at all to a headline. And so the way this thing landed in the secular press was very badly. The document itself has important distinctions and nuances that are really critical in understanding that there is no alteration with respect to our doctrines on marriage, on chastity, human sexuality, none whatsoever. That really the focus of this document coming out of the Dicastery for the Doctrine of Faith was that of the nature of a blessing. And who can receive a blessing. So the document made some important distinctions regarding what it generally refers to as these pastoral type blessings, these blessings that come up in pastoral circumstances versus proper blessings that are presented in the life of the church. They tend to be more liturgical, they have prescribed vesture, there are prescribed words, there are prescribed circumstances, there are prescribed objects to receive the blessing. Most people don't know that the church even has a book of blessings. Mm. Priests do, because that's part of our training, so we have to know what we're supposed to do and what circumstance and what prayers are available. Those types of blessings are truly distinct from what you might experience in everyday life. So for example, since I've been a priest since 1999, I can't tell you the number of times I've had people come up to me and ask for a blessing, or groups that you might not expect. So for example, like here in Charlotte, I go to the airport, a wonderful woman sitting behind the wheel of a bus that brings me to my parking lot, you know, to connect me to the terminal, would say something, "Oh, Father, so nice to see," or not Father, sometimes it's Reverend, "nice to see you, Reverend. Oh, you're such a blessing, give me your blessing." And of course, with a beautiful Southern accent, which I can do so badly because I'm from upstate New York. But nonetheless, I wave my hand. It's a bit more like a prayer of intercession. I'm not doing anything that's prescribed in the rites of the church. I'm not doing anything that's a ritual blessing or an ecclesiastical approbation of a circumstance or a situation. I don't know. She could be Christian, likely, if she's calling me Reverend, but maybe she isn't. She could be baptized. She could be unbaptized. She could be married 10 times. She could be not married. I don't know what her circumstances are. But in that moment, she's just asking for me, who she associates with God, to just invoke some blessing upon her. Mm-hmm. That has been a bit of the practice in the life of the church for as long as I've been involved in the church, since I was in seminary and after. And those are really quite distinct from liturgical blessings and blessings that are formal by the church herself, who says these things may be blessed formally. Salt, water, homes, cars, animals, those who are preparing for marriage, an expectant mother, and those are proper, and all of those involve circumstances that are rightly ordered to all vocations, or at least to those vocations for which they're proper. In the case of this pastoral blessing, which is really the distinction that's being made by the document, it's just simply saying nobody should be turned away. They're characterized in the document as being spontaneous requests. They're characterized as not involving any ritual text. These types of blessings are characterized as really almost like unexpected interactions that you don't know anything about the circumstances of someone. But if a couple comes before you, they could be two men, two women, it could be four men, four women, it could be a man and a woman. You don't have to ask, what is the nature of your relationship?
And you're right that these requests are very common. Even mm-hmm. just today, on the way to class, a student asked me for a blessing for something that mm-hmm. they were working through. And so this document is trying to distinguish between those two types of blessings.
Yes.
One which is more formal and liturgical, and one pastoral, which is almost like on the fly, we might say. Mm-hmm. And in the second case, just anyone coming forward to ask for a blessing, mm-hmm. that everyone is welcome.
Absolutely. And in a certain sense, as a cleric, as a priest, as one who's ordained, my immediate reaction is, you see me is somehow associated with God, who you revere, and whose blessings you want. That's usually my first instinct. Mm. And so my reaction to that is, oh, that's really nice. They have a better understanding of my vocation, or at least a rudimentary understanding of my vocation than probably the average person. Mm. So that's usually my first instinct. And at that point, of course, I would ask God's blessing upon you. I mean, people sneeze and I say, God bless you, mm-hmm. right? I remember one story, a friend of mine, a priest, he was walking into, Walmart or a grocery store, and some gentleman sneezed on the way out, and he said, God bless you. And the guy said, thank you. And he said, just do my job. And he walked into the store. Funny moment. But we have many different circumstances where these type of spontaneous pastoral blessings may occur. The document is simply making it clear that you don't have to inspect the circumstances and situations, especially irregular circumstances and situations. One might even say sometimes immoral circumstances or situations, in order to be able to impart this type of blessing, which is much more akin to a prayer of intercession, of asking God's grace on this person. So for example, I do prison ministry, and I've been involved in prison ministry for a long time, even before I entered the seminary, because of my father, who's been involved in prison ministry for years. But when I go into a prison facility and I do a program, usually half of the men there are for a Catholic program, not Catholic, or maybe even more not Catholic. And a good number of them might be Muslim, mm-hmm. Or some other like Taoist or some other type of a religious association. But if I'm in the room and we're praying grace before a meal, or I could offer a blessing to everybody there to protect them from evil, to draw them closer to God, it's fantastic. But it never, I have to say, never once in my life as a priest, I was ordained in 1999, did I think I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So there was kind of a surprise in reading the document, because I thought, I didn't know that there was even a question that needed to be answered as to whether or not I could do that. But that's when you start to ask the question, well, why? You know, why this document? Why now? What is it trying to get after? And, you know, and upon my reflection, there it's a large world, a lot of circumstances and geopolitical situations and cultural situations in which the church exists and is particularized all over the globe. And I think that there are other circumstances around the world that may need these distinctions more than, say, the culture that I've been a part of for the past 20, 30 years in life at the church. I didn't seem to think that there was anything here that was somehow going to alter my behavior, because I've been kind of doing that anyway. Mm-hmm. I remember one time there were these two women in my first parish assignment. You know, I didn't know what their circumstances were, and then I never really inquired. But they lived together. They were both former religious, but they came to daily mass. They were devout, and I came to know them and really love them dearly. And their whole life was about living the faith, and they supported one another. And there was a profound friendship. And there was never anything that was projected by them or anyone else, that anything contrary to the life of the church was going on. And, but yet you never saw them apart from one another. You know, they were bound at the hip. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. You know, and when you look at situations in which people find themselves, there are ways that they can align themselves with the grace of God, that they can live in accordance with one's vocation, that they can also enter deep, profound, I would dare say, chastely intimate friendships that are so important and significant that people who might not otherwise be naturally inclined toward marriage should be able to find a good and healthy affection, a good and healthy companion, a way to live, not in isolation or loneliness. And it was beautiful to see. I mean, they prayed for me constantly, and you know, and I would they would go on pilgrimages with me. It was beautiful, wonderful, wonderful people. So I look at that and I think, if they had come to me and say, "Father, can we have your blessing?" I wouldn't have said, "What's happening behind closed doors?" That would be an absurdity. Mm-hmm. I mean, and add to the fact that they were regularly practicing the faith. They were going to confession. They were, you know, it was. But somebody, to think that somebody in some other culture or context might have stopped them and said, "What's going on here?" Well, maybe that's what the document was for, because maybe something like that's happening somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very helpful and very clarifying. As you kind of alluded to, there is perhaps some ability to misinterpret this document. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can clarify some of the misinterpretations that have occurred. What is this document not saying?
Sure. Well, actually, I think that the Holy See, that the Dicastery for the Doctrine of Faith, has followed up with a press release, specifically the Cardinal Prefect, who authored the original document. And he said, "Look, this is not landing the way it's supposed to be landing. And here are some ways in which this is being misinterpreted." And so he went on to say, you know, these pastoral blessings, they're more spontaneous in nature. They're pastoral in nature. They're not formal liturgical blessings in the rite of the church. They shouldn't be happening in churches at all, right? Which at that point, immediately after Supplicans came out, there were pictures mm-hmm. of priests in churches offering blessings over various people. And this follow-up from the Dicastery basically said, no, that should not be happening. Mm-hmm. That's not the pastoral blessing that we're talking about. And so I think that the Holy See has issued some clarification. Mm-hmm. And I think that the clarification is doubly down on the fact that everybody who wants a blessing from God, no matter where they're starting from, at what point they are in life, at what sort of entanglements they may have, can ask for a blessing, a pastoral blessing from a priest, in much the same way they would ask for a prayer. Mm-hmm. and that you can make the sign of the cross over them, ask God to grant them grace, strength, healing, and to help them follow more closely the light of God in their lives. I don't see how any of that is even controversial at all, to be quite honest. I mean, when, like I mentioned, going into prisons, I mean, you have people, you have men who are, you know, they're in gangs, and there are a lot of bad things. And there are prison gangs, and then there are gangs that have their associations outside the prison. They could be involved in a lot of bad things. And if one of them comes up to me, you know, with, you know, tattoos all over his body, and very intimidating looking, and say, "Father, can I have your blessing?" And it's very evident by some insignia or some type of thing on his, you know, tattooed or otherwise on his body that he's part of a gang, I'm not going to say, "Go get out of this gang that is clearly doing grave evil in the world, and then come back." You know, he needs blessing now. Mm-hmm. Maybe that he would have the strength to disentangle.
Makes sense. And mm-hmm. certainly we don't need to ask for the full background, but just we wish the goodness of God to a person in
of
their
course.
Situation.
Of course. You know, I think there's a side of this that I think people are missing. There's a pastoral dimension in supplicans that I'd like to see over the arc of some time for the church to reflect upon. In my ministry as a priest, and maybe you can relate in yours, I've met with a number of families, a number of parents and grandparents and cousins and siblings and so on and so forth who have members of their family living in, whether it's a gay union or whether it's an illicit marriage, and asking about things like, one, can I go to a ceremony? A parent with a teenager, do I kick them out of the house? These types of questions, what do we do? Because they're conflicted. They're conflicted on the one hand that they, especially a parent with a child, where they're accustomed to, and one would argue that they have an obligation to correct their children. On the other hand, the practice of basically excommunicating a child from your home is a type of violence that burns bridges, that doesn't allow for a relationship to grow, a loving relationship to grow, in such a way that the witness of faith could have any real impact. In fact, you could do so much damage in the way in which you handle that circumstance or that situation, that should the child at some point want to come back and have a conversation and seek some help, they won't be able to get over it. Yeah, there's too much of a barrier, too much water under the bridge, too much pain. So what I like about the document, or rather what I think the document can begin to help with, is not what I think primarily intended to help with, making a distinction on blessing, but it is in a way modeling in the family of the church that we love our family. Mm-hmm. And that in the family of the church, people get themselves caught up in all sorts of situations and they go down some windy paths. But the document is saying we can still love them, we can still pray for God's blessing upon them, and we can still also be a witness to the truth of the gospel that we profess and believe. That you don't have to forego one for the other. And to say to a family, look, this is how the church as a family is handling the situation. Now this is a way in which you can handle the situation. You can say to your children, I love you. I pray God's blessing upon you. I want to continue to pray with you. I want to be a part of your life. I believe this. I don't think this is what God has intended for you. But it doesn't mean that I don't love you. Mm-hmm. And that there is a way to have a relationship that that is loving, but also bearing witness. And is ready at the time when circumstances present to receive at a moment of grace.
And above all, it's really retaining the connection, the mm-hmm. ability for grace to flow between the two and doesn't rupture the relationship.
And not at the expense of anyone's faith mm-hmm. and not at the expense of bearing witness to that faith. Mm-hmm. It's not an either or proposition. You know, Father, I often, I used to have more time hearing confessions. Now that my life has pulled me into the administrative world, I sometimes wish I was back in the confessional because of the administration is oftentimes more fraught with sin than the confessional itself. But in the confessional environment, I would often tell people, it's not about what you say. It's about what you say and when you say it. That it's a bit like a lock and a key. They both have to be there in order for something to open up. And sometimes saying the right words at the wrong time does more damage. It has to be the right words at the right time. And it's a better part of wisdom and prudence to be able to determine, you know, when that is the case. So I always say, you know, my counsel and advice, when in doubt, choose silence, because you really can't pull the words back. Mm-hmm. But to ask, you know, in a given moment for some divine providence to make it clear if this is the right moment. I've done it myself in circumstances when I've had my wits about me. And I've had, most of the time, I'd say like 7 times out of 10, I don't get a sense of divine providence. But maybe those 3 times out of 10 I do, it makes all the difference because something turned in the conversation, the other person brought it up, and it allowed for them to hear what I thought was important to say. And in these types of conversations, whether it's people in invalid marriages or people in same-sex relationships and things like that, or people who are just kind of meandering on any number of topics, exploring with occultism, maybe getting involved in a gang, you name it, whatever it might be, where we have a sense relative to the lights of our faith, that they're getting off track. It's not enough to just stand there and say what you think needs to be heard. Because one, it may not be heard. And two, it's sometimes just self-indulgent. You're just satisfying your need to have to say something. But you really kind of need that lock and key, the right words at the right moment. And if you burn the bridges, you never have those moments.
And we have the example of Christ in the Gospels. Mm-hmm. He didn't always say the same thing to people in different circumstances. He found different words. Mm-hmm. And precisely, of course, he did that perfectly.
He did, yes.
For us, it's kind of an appeal to the Holy Spirit to inspire us when to be silent,
sure,
when words to speak.
Absolutely.
In your experience as Vicar General, mm-hmm. how do you feel that the diocese has received this letter and is kind of putting it into practice? Have you heard anything back from the priests?
Well, we did have initially a few emails come in and say, we hope that the Chancellery will say something to help clarify. And I think that had a lot to do with the headlines that were coming out that morning and that day. You know, I woke up in the morning and I had my coffee, sat down, and I go immediately to these various, you know, sites to kind of what's going on in the world this morning, what did I miss in the past 8 hours of sleep or 5 hours of sleep, whatever the case may be. And of course I see, okay, this declaration from the Holy Spirit, from the Dicastery for the Doctrine of Faith comes out. I read through it and I had this sense like, oh, well, there'll be a lot of chatter about that. I did not anticipate how much, right? I that's not my skill set. We have a comms office in our building and they have a much better sense when the earth is about to shake. Whereas I'm like, it's just a tremor, you know? And they're like, no, Father, this is going to be an earthquake. This had more of that earthquake vibe, at least for a day. That kind of took me a little bit by surprise because as I read through it, as I'm sure for you as well, you have philosophy background, you have the theological background, you have the pastoral practice background, you have the sacramentality background, and you have the sort of church ease, that sort of language, and you can read through it and you're like, oh, I get that. You know, this is not a hard concept. This distinction on blessings is not difficult. And you could say very honestly, yeah, well, to be in the American context, that's kind of what's been going on for quite a while. I didn't know there was any other way to act. Mm-hmm. But then we would get some emails, and priests were reading headlines, not the document itself. And that was a bit more alarming, saying, what's going on here? It seemed like there was some articulation of doctrine that was contrary to 2,000 years. And of course, when that happens for a Catholic, and I don't think the secular world really understands this, that it's no longer about the topic. It's about the authenticity of the church. And if the church doesn't have an authentic magisterial teaching, then the part of its purpose for existing is completely undermined. Mm-hmm. And your faith in the church is corroded. And at that point, you would have legitimate questions about whether or not the Catholic Church is who she says she is. So it hits nerves. It didn't matter what the topic. If they came out and said that we're, you know, the doctrine, the dicastery of the doctrine of faith is rethinking the dual natures of Christ, it would have hit the same nerves in priests.
Yes.
It would be like, what? This is not what I thought we were. And it would have
but a that's not what this document
is. No, it doesn't. Yeah. Exactly. It's not that on the topic of blessings, and it's certainly not that on the dual nature of Christ. Mm-hmm. But that's the type of nerve that gets hit for people like priests or religious or others who are more informed. For your rankophile, they were just kind of breathing the air of the culture and the environment. They're like, oh, maybe the church is getting along with, you know, going along with the secular world on this point or something. They don't really think in those terms. But for the priest type, it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And not just because of the issue, but because of the underlying issue. Either the church has magisterial authority that is communicating the deposit of faith coming down through 2,000 years of reflection and some development through that reflection, but its origins, the teaching of Christ, or it doesn't. And if you can show where there's a substantial change, not a fuller understanding, but an actual break, then the church isn't who she says she is. Mm. And that undermines the faith of clergy, that will undermine the faith of believers, it will undermine the faith of everybody. And that's where it gets nervy. So, you know, at that point, we were getting some questions, and I knew that that was really the larger nervy point. So I read over the document again, just to make sure that the document steered clear of anything that could be remotely considered as a shift away from the perennial teaching of the Church on marriage. And it says so, that flat out and explicitly, there is no change in the teaching on chastity and the teaching on marriage. This is just all about the nature of a pastoral blessing. So at that, I worked our comms office, and I wrote up an article that was slavish to the content of the document itself, and we ran that through our communication. And to be quite honest, it was silent after that. Our people through our newspaper and the website, they just had, I think, a clear framing of the matter, and it was over. I mean, there was no more drama.
Any other thoughts you might have about this? I think we've done a good job in kind of covering some of the points.
Well, good. You know, I would say that it certainly, this effort from the Holy See, it does fit with a larger effort to figure out how the church can be more Christ-like insofar as Christ engaged, as the gospel says, sinners, right? Would go and be with the tax collectors, would go and speak to people who had ill reputations, would be more directly engaged in conversation. And I think that one of the efforts of this pontificate is to figure out how to break the mold where we're in this standoff, where you have secular world and secular culture that just is in a standoff with, say, the church and the faith, and there is simply no real dialogue in between. There's no conversation. There's just, you're wrong, no, you're wrong. And let's take it to the political battlefield and duke it out there. And sadly, I think that is not too far off of a characterization of where we are in the West anyway. Something does need to give in that regard. I personally want to have conversations with people for the opportunity, not just to learn about another person and a whole nother world that God has invested in, no matter what circumstances they're in. God created this person, and there's this whole world to which I have no particular knowledge, and I'm fascinated by. But at the same time, can I show you the light that has changed my world? Can I put you in touch with that? Can I show you that? I can't have those conversations if everybody is just in their own corners in a standoff and only going to the political arena to try to see who can win there. That's not a good place to be. So I do appreciate the Holy See's efforts in trying to sort of crack that cultural standoff and to try to get everyone off their on their heels a little bit and away from it. But it does come with some peril. And that is, when you have a very nuanced document like this, people can, at face value, either misread it and you get really strange headlines that mislead people. I promise you, there are many people across the US that think right now that the church is celebrating gay marriage. Mm. Just from the headlines. And you know, I remember when Obergefell, you know, the Supreme Court decision came out with respect to an interpretation of the Constitution regarding marriage. And that week, we had two women with a child come in and said, we want to get married. And so, you know, let's talk. So the parochial vicar at the time was kind of surprised, came in, and they were shocked to hear that the Supreme Court didn't change the practice of the church. It didn't even register that it didn't matter for us what the state regarded as a marriage, that we have our own doctrine about what marriage is. But for them, it was a headline, you know, same-sex marriage now legal. They interpret that as, well, that means everyone accepts it now. And so just go to the religion of your choice, the church of your choice, and you'll be able to get married. So I think that these are the types of perils that you run into. I suspect the Holy See is taking calculated risks with respect to some of those perils and making these types of communiques. And I suspect that some of the motive behind a document like this is to kind of get off this standoff that maybe feels like we're in. And that's where you get a lot of the language of accompaniment, you get a lot of the language of, you know, walking with and journeying with people in their circumstances. Because it's another way of articulating, get out of the posture of standing off with people. Let's go back to the gospel way.
To keep the relationship going and the dialogue going.
Mm-hmm. And the witness going and some mutual respect, honesty. But it never means having to relinquish your own convictions or for that matter, having to somehow alter the light of the gospel. It doesn't need filters.
Well, Monsignor Winslow, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been, I think, a very helpful and clarifying discussion. And hopefully everyone who has joined us today has also had a greater understanding of this document and its connection and its exhortation to the Christian faithful. And we invite you to continue to join in future episodes of Conversation. Have a blessed day.